Good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is SCARS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SCARS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off this system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our operation may be found at www.scarsvoip.com. You have many net controls this evening, but I'm merely opening it up this evening. My name is Kathleen. My call is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and my location is Port St. Lucie, Florida, where it's currently a temperature of about 72. We did have a high of about 83, and so the cold weather has sort of left us, maybe temporarily. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, please come aboard. All right, hearing no emergency traffic, you know, that's always a great thing. But how about anyone celebrating a birthday? Maybe today, last week, this upcoming week, that would like to come aboard so we could say happy, happy.
WK2DY.
Well, hi, Mr. Robert. Are you having a birthday?
Actually, my son is having a birthday. He's having his 25th birthday tomorrow, and so I thought he's not listening at the moment, unfortunately, so we can't wish him a happy birthday, but we are definitely celebrating his 25th birthday tomorrow. His name is also Robert, by the way, VK2DY.
All right, that's really super, Robert. You know, someone else I know is very close to me. Also going to be celebrating a birthday coming up pretty soon. So I have a question for you, Robert, before we head on. I know Gordon usually sends something to you about you checking in with us for the Saturday AM connection. Do you think you're okay for that?
I got Gordon's email. Yeah, I think I should be okay with that midnight Sunday morning for me, but yeah, I should be fine. VK2DY.
All right, that's great news, Robert. Thank you so much. And tell your son happy birthday, by the way. A long time ago, probably all of us were 25, so I'm sure he's celebrating. So this is the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. Tonight's program is about online testing, and we do have those in Australia, we have those in the UK, and those in the United States, as well as VECs joining us. So if you're part of this recording tonight or part of the session tonight, you'll definitely be part of that recording. Let me pause for just a moment. Before I continue on, I know all of you have been very concerned about Gordon and his recovery. He is progressing, but he's still under the weather. He is listening, but I will be opening it up for everyone. So give him your well wishes as you come across tonight. Think of him, but he is doing well, and he is progressing, but it's quite a process that's going to probably take place, and he is the one at the end of the week having a birthday. So you, at some time tonight, you can throw out those birthday wishes. So I want to thank and welcome everyone tonight to the January 2023 program. You know, tonight we're going to be discussing amateur radio online testing. In doing so, we will also include how it is done in other parts of the world. We wish to thank all the shakers and the bakers that have compiled this procedure. Tonight's session will be in large part a repeat of our program that was produced on November 19, 2020. It has been modified and updated to the facts now in play in comparison to those that existed about 3 years ago. Let me take another nickel. We will be starting by working from far, far away and ending up here in the United States. This being done due to the wide divergence of time in the countries being represented. We will be starting with David GW8ZGL, who will be speaking from Wales in the UK, where it will be 12 midnight, and following with Robert in Sydney, where it will be 11 a.m. on Friday. We will then move into our speakers from the United States, who will include David Kilo Bravo 9 EWG in Wisconsin. We have standing by in the wings four prominent VEC testers, that being KE5ALF, KD8JBS, KZ1B, and KY4NB. They will be with us filling in information, additional information, asking questions from the presenters, and supplying additional questions and answers requested by the audience. So, without further ado, let me throw it over to our first guest speaker, which is David over there in Wales, GW8SZL. The podium is yours, and have fun tonight, David. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Thank you very much, Miss Sunshine. This is Dave, off Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima, over here in Newport in South Wales in the UK. And tonight I'm going to discuss the online testing for the radio amateurs examinations here in the UK. There is currently no age restriction on obtaining a radio amateurs license here in the UK. Unlike when I got licensed over 40 years ago, when the minimum age requirement was 14 years old. There are three tiers of license currently here in the UK. They are the entry level, which is called the foundation license, followed by the intermediate, and then the full license, also known as the advanced license. The foundation license is the same as your technician license over there in the US. The intermediate is the same as your general, and the full license is the same as your amateur extra license. Now, there are also practical examinations associated with the foundation and the intermediate license courses, including basic CW appreciation for the foundation course. But the RSGB, the Radio Society of Great Britain, have dropped the practical assessment as part of the individual license examinations due to COVID, where radio clubs had to close here in the UK. Now, whether they will be reintroduced or not is a matter of ongoing discussion. Currently, they have not been reintroduced, so it's the same as it was 3 years ago. Now, personally, I think the practical tests are an extremely good idea, but other people's opinions may differ. Now, the difference between the license classes here in the UK are, as an entry-level foundation license holder, you're allowed a maximum of 10 watts on all modes, from HF up to and including the 10 gigahertz band, but it does exclude 60 meters, which is the 5 megahertz band. As an intermediate license holder, you're allowed a maximum of 50 watts on all modes from HF up to and including 24 gigahertz, but again, excluding the 5 megahertz band. As a full license holder, you're allowed a maximum of 400 watts on all modes, on all the legal amateur bands in the UK, and that does include the 5 megahertz band. The examinations here are coordinated then by a national society, the Radio Society of Great Britain, also known as the RSGB. Our license authority is Ofcom, which stands for the Office of Communications. Up until the COVID pandemic, all amateur examinations would take place at official licensed examination centres, which have all been authorised by the Radio Society of Great Britain. These are normally radio clubs, but not limited to such. Reset. As all the radio clubs had to close, no examinations or practical assessments could take place. So the Radio Society of Great Britain had a look at implementing online examinations instead. Even though there were discussions about this option over the last three to six years now, it was not high on their priority list until COVID pandemic started. So back then, when COVID hit, the online examinations in the UK were born. Having recently gone through the process with my son Declan, who has now achieved intermediate status at the age of 12, he's now 14 by the way, and he used online invigilation, so it was an online exam, I am very familiar with the processes involved. The first step is to apply to the RSGB and pay the appropriate fee for the license examination that you wish to take. You're advised by the RSGB to make it at least 10 days from the date of application. I think 10 days is a bit short, but again, that's my opinion. The reason for this will become clear shortly. Now, once the RSGB processes your application, the candidate will receive an email confirming that your date is available, and if not, they will offer any free slots around that date. Once a date and time has been agreed, the candidate will receive an email from their assigned invigilator outlining a series of events to follow. First off is a mutually convenient time for the invigilator to contact you and talk you through the examination procedure and what is expected from the candidate in order for the actual examination to proceed. Now, this is very informal and you can ask questions as well. These include having Cisco WebEx installed on two devices. Cisco WebEx is the only allowed method to supply the two video feeds and an audio feed to the invigilator. One video feed could be, say, from a webcam on a laptop, so the invigilator can see the candidate face on. And the other video feed is a side view in order to prevent any form of cheating. A mobile phone can be used for this as well, but both views must be available and work in, or the examination cannot actually take place. The audio feed can be from either the laptop or the mobile phone, so the invigilator can hear everything that goes on while the examination is in progress. Lisa? Also, the candidate needs to install a piece of software called TestReach, which is an online assessment tool used for the examination. In the run-up to the examination, you can familiarize yourself with the TestReach software as many times as you would like until you are happy in using it. Before the examination starts, you must have proof of your identity. This has to be a photo ID, which is held up to one of the cameras so the invigilator can see that it is the real candidate that is taking the examination and not somebody else. The requirement is a passport or a photo ID driving license. Now, if the candidate is actually under 16 years of age, they might not have a passport, and they definitely do not have a photo ID driving license. In that event, a parent's or legal guardian's passport or photo ID driving license will suffice. But this must be agreed before the examination date, or the examination cannot go ahead. There are also other acceptable forms of identification, but once again, they need to be agreed before the date of the examination. If the candidate previously applied for an examination at the radio club, which got cancelled and had already passed the practical assessments, that only applies to the foundation intermediate examinations only, they will be asked to present the appropriate filled-in form to one of the webcams. As mentioned previously, this is now optional, but you will still be asked, so it can be added to your examination records. Next, the invigilator will ask the candidate to pan around the room in which the examination is actually going to take place to ensure that the room is suitable for the examination to proceed. Well, that covers the first familiarization with the invigilator. But that is not where it ends. Yet another time and date is arranged, usually a couple of days before the examination date with the invigilator. This time, it is to ensure everything is working correctly. So basically, it's a live test of the video and audio feeds, and also a dry run on a TestReach software, in case of any technical problems. Now, the main problem encountered is usually internet bandwidth problems. Hence, this live test was created to give the candidate time to resolve them actually before the real examination. If the invigilator did not have the two video feeds, without freezing and the audio feed, the examination could not continue and would have to be rescheduled at a later date. Another live test can be arranged if any problems are found to ensure they have been eradicated. And now we come to the actual examination time. The invigilator will go through the procedure previously outlined, a photo ID, panning the camera around the room, etc., etc. Then the candidate will be told that the questions are generated as soon as they log on to the Test Suite software. And like in the US, candidates for all the three tiers of license in the UK do not have prior access to the question pool. And that is why it is essential that everything in the course syllabus is fully understood before attempting any of the examinations. The invigilator will then explain that once the examination starts, they will not be able to see what is on the candidate's monitor. They cannot see the questions or the answers selected by the candidate. The only thing the invigilator can actually see now are the two video feeds and listen to the open audio feed, which is muted on the invigilator's side for the duration of the examination. But the candidate can talk to the invigilator, and the invigilator has to unmute themselves to respond to the candidate if there's any questions or queries. Now, even if the candidate answers all the questions in a short period of time, the submit button on the Test Suite software will not be available to complete the examination. It is grayed out until after 50% of the allocated time for the examination has passed. Lisa? Now, once the candidate has finished the examination and submitted it, the invigilator still cannot see the candidate's screen, but the candidate will know the score and whether they have passed or failed straight away. Usually, the invigilator asks the candidate for the score at this time. If the candidate is successful, the Radio Society of Great Britain forwards that information to Ofcom, the regulator here in the UK. Once that has been done, the candidate can then log into the Ofcom site and select his or her shiny new call sign. And now here is some breaking news about a new actual examination here in the UK. It's called the Direct to Full Examination. And that allows students to get a full ham radio license by sitting only one examination. And that basically covers the foundation course, the intermediate course, and the full course, all in one. And it lasts two and a half hours. And following the introduction of this particular Direct to Full course, the syllabus was first actually issued in July 2022. Now, bookings for the Direct to Full exam are now available. You can only take this exam online, but you can book it as an individual or through your local radio club on the RSGB website. Now, the first Direct to Full online examination slot will be on Saturday the 21st of January this year. So it's coming up soon. Tomorrow, is it? I think. I don't know. And the exam, yeah, we will last 2.5 hours. I just made a note of that. Now, the bookings page on the RSGB site has been updated with the director for information, and that was actually done on the 11th of January. So anybody can now make a booking on the RSGB website. Now, at this point, I'm going to just reset one more time. Okay, at this time, I was going to pass it over to Declan to Whiskey Zero Kilo Yankee Hotel, but as it's gone midnight here in the UK and he's got school in the morning, he has asked me to read out his opinions on the online and the actual written papers for the examinations here in the UK. I'm going to read it as he has written it. So here we go. This is 2W0KYH, Declan in South Wales. And I took an online intermediate examination and passed. I think the online method of examination is better for two reasons. The first is because you get your results immediately after finishing the examination, whereas the invigilator has to mark it when you are using an optical mark sheet on paper if you go the written route. And the second is because you're less likely to make mistakes as opposed to if you took the exam on paper with an optical mark sheet. And this is also known as an OMS, that's Oscar Mike Sierra. As even if you get the correct answer, you could get a wrong mark if you put the answer in the wrong place. And what it is, it's a sheet where you actually put a little line in there next to the A, B, C, or D, the multiple choice questions. And unless you use a ruler or something else, to actually line them up with the actual question number, it is so easy to put the answer in the wrong place. And another thing that Declan wanted to talk about is the online invigilation. And he says, I have absolutely no issues with the way you get invigilated, but I was surprised to be invigilated by Dave Wilson, who was the then president of the Radio Society of Great Britain, when he took his actual own examination. Let me reset. Okay, so his final comment was, so overall, Declan felt that the online examination is better than the actual written one with an optional optical mark sheet. Okay, that's it from the about the UK online examination system compared to the older version. The older version is still actually available, so you can take your pick. But it's only available though for the foundation, the intermediate, and the full exam. The new director full is only online at this time. So I'm going to put it open for anybody got any questions, comments, or just like to check in and say hi. This is GW8SNL.
Victor Echo 7, Papa Golf Kilo, just checking in.
KE5AOF with a question.
And KB9EWG with a comment.
Okay, I've got Victor Echo 7, Papa Golf Kilo. Hi there, Ken. I'm just checking in there to say hi. I've got Greg, KE5ALF, and I've got David, KB9EWG. So we'll go over to Greg, KE5ALF. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, Dave, just a quick question. I was wondering, what's it cost over there in the UK for your license that you pay for each session and then for the license itself?
Yeah, okay there, Greg. Well, how it works is this way. Most amateur radio clubs over here will actually do the actual license courses for free. On the intermediate, you go on the practical test, you've got to build a few things to demonstrate practical skills, and the radio club will normally pass those, unless they're rich, of course, and normally, shall I say, pass that on to the actual person doing the course. But that's usually the case. But if somebody doesn't have a lot of money, they will waive them those fees as well. Now, so basically, the courses are free. Most places you can get them, no problem at all. The licenses, you have to pay for an examination fee. The current foundation license is £27.50. I'm not sure whether that's in US dollars. And then I think the full one is around about £47. I can't remember what the intermediate one is, but they do go up. So £27.50 for the foundation. Somewhere in between then, I can't remember what it is, and something like about £47, £49 for the full. But you do have to pay for each examination Greg. From GW8SRL. Oh, by the way, the license is free, by the way. So it's just the examination, basically. Licenses are free over here, and you just got to confirm you still want them every 5 years. KE5ALF, GW8SRL.
Thank you for the information. This is KE5ALF. Turn it back to net control.
Okay there, Greg. No problems whatsoever. And let me go right to Mr. David, KB9EWG. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, thank you, Dave. Good evening to you there, or probably good morning over that way, actually. Early morning for you there. First, I want to say a good presentation. The actual comment I had was Ben, KDHJBS, was listed to be here for the net this evening. And he did text me shortly before the net, so he will not be able to attend the net this evening and give comments there. And he is a team lead for the ARL testing team, so unfortunately Ben will be here this evening. KB9EWG.
Yeah, KB9EWG, GW8SNL. Yes, it's nearly 1:30 in the morning here now, so it is a bit late. So if Declan didn't have school in the morning, he could have done that bit on himself. But he needs his sleep there. Okay. Do you have any further comments there, David? GW8SNL.
One other thing here. I did try looking up statistics on the GARG website for my segment there, and the segment or the statistics side of the site is broken right now, so I can't get the current stats, unfortunately. I can kind of give an estimate there, but the stats I'm supposed to give are unfortunately not working. KB9EWG.
Yeah, okay there, and all noted on that there, David. That's typical there. Hi. Okay, is there anybody else who'd like to check in? Got any comments, questions that I might be able to answer, even? This is GW8SNL.
GW8SNL KY4NB. This is Scott here, Dave, from Memphis. Quick question.
Okay, I've got Mr. Scott there. That's KY4NB. Is there anybody else? Okay, hearing nobody. So we go right to Scott, KY4MB. Now go ahead with your question.
Well, hi, Dave, and everybody on the net. Just want to say thank everybody for doing the presentation tonight. Thank you, Dave, for starting us off here in Great Britain and all. Are you finding so far this year in 2023 that online testing's going gangbusters still, like it may have been during COVID? I mean, I know more people are getting out and wanting to meet, and like our local clubs meeting in person again, and they do their BE testing in person. Of course, they don't have too many people. We do classes, and so there might be 14 or 15 in a larger class. But do you find that the online testing is, the numbers are still up like they may have been earlier when everybody was kind of shut in? KY4NB, back over to GW8SZL.
KY4MB, GW, hey, I said, oh, that's a really good question there, Scott, and thank you for asking it. Actual online testing is maintaining a steady pace. It's dropped slightly since COVID, but not much. Obviously, the radio clubs, you know, are all meeting again now because they don't have any COVID restrictions. But the online testing seems to have taken off like a hot potato, and it's still maintaining its level. It's down slightly, about maybe 4% or 5%, but it's averaging around there, and it's going well. A lot of people are actually taking online courses for the foundation exam, the entry level into the ham radio over here in the UK, and then taking the test online at home. So online testing is at a high, shall we say, still, and I think it's with this director fall, that's a bit of a hab when that exam. If you have a go to the RSGB website, you can have a look at the syllabus on it, and I say there's no question pool made public like you got in the US. The questions are just generated and from the syllabus. And so if you know the syllabus, and you know the syllabus like the back of your hand, then you shouldn't have a problem passing it, unless, of course, the examiners get you. So but online testing is still going strong, and I think it's going to continue that way, because you can do it at home. It's easy. You're in a familiar environment when you're taking the exam. It's not like the old, in a hall or in a room on your own there with two invigilators sort of watching you. Like the old school exams there, Scott. KY4MB, GW8SZL.
GW8SZL, KY4NB. Well, thank you, Dave. That's wonderful to hear that the numbers are staying up there, and I have not been involved too long in the GLARG testing. David's been helping me get started there, and I do appreciate that. And I'm a little slow getting going there, but I've attended some sessions, and the numbers always seem like it come in with quite a few people, so I think that's wonderful that people are taking advantage of this online testing. But thanks for answering the question, Dave, and I'll turn it back over to you in the net. GW8SZL, this is KY4NB.
KY4MB from GW8SZL. Okay there, Scott. Yep, I think it's going to continue the way it is, and more new blood we get into the hobby, the better as well. And so the more the merrier, I would say. And at this point, I'd like to wish Gordon a quick recovery. We're all missing you, Gordon, especially over here across the pond. And have a happy birthday. I'm not sure if it's today, because we're ahead of you. We're now into Friday morning, or if it's Thursday, I don't know. But have a happy birthday anyway. I'm sure you're out there listening. Okay, with that said, we're now going to go down to the other side of the planet. Oh, we're actually going to go to Australia, in fact, Sydney, Australia. So, and we're going to go and speak to Robert, and that's Victor Kilo 2 Delta Yankee. So, VK2DY, 2W8SZL, I'm passing it over to you there, Robert.
2W8SZL, VK2DY, Robert, indeed, in northwestern Sydney here. I'll give the tagline, Kellyville Ridge, New South Wales, but all part of the urban sprawl that is Sydney. It's about 20 degrees Celsius, raining on and off. It's a cool, wet summer's day here in Sydney. Anyway, thank you again for passing it off to me, and I must wish Gordon a quick and speedy recovery and a happy birthday. He is missed. We love to hear his voice on the radio. Anyway, I am going to explain the Australian online testing system. But first I need to preference this by explaining that the ACMA, the body responsible for ham radio licenses, has tabled a proposal to convert amateur radio from an apparatus license to a class-based license. The main advantage to the ACMA is that the hams would be under the class license, which is a document that they author and control, rather than being under the license condition document, which has parliamentary oversight. So they would be able to change things easier than they are able to do now. One of the things they wanted to do was give AX call signs for the death of Queen Elizabeth. Couldn't do it, but they could under a class license. Anyway, other than that, it's likely subject to ITU rules. They would also be able to deed off the license database itself to some other body. At the moment, the examination process is deeded to the Australian Maritime College, which handles maritime licenses. So they also now handle amateur radio licenses and have for the last 4 or 5 years. So there's a possibility that they will deed off the license database itself. But again, that's up onto that's on the table at the moment, but not really approved. Let me reset for a sec. And the thing that they've offered us in exchange for that is that they would eliminate the annual fee, which currently is $55 a year. So that would be a big advantage to ham radio operators to not have to pay that annual fee. So we shall see exactly what happens. But at any rate, it's a much larger discussion than I want to go into right at the moment here. Just like the UK, we have the same three levels of licenses, Foundation, Standard, and Advanced. That's how we usually refer to them, but they're the same ones. And they're restricted in a similar way, except that the standard is 100 watts instead of 50 watts. But otherwise, I think they're pretty similar. But at any rate, that's what they are. One of the things here in Australia that you do is you're not actually testing for a license. You're testing for a certificate of proficiency, which can then be used to qualify for a license. So the certificates you receive are lifetime, whereas the license comes and goes. You can choose at this point between a 5 year license. You have to pay the fees for 5 years, but some people have chosen to do the 5 year renewal rather than having to pay the fee every year. Let me say it again. I understand that back in the old days they used the term invigilators here as well, but at this point they've changed the name to examiners. And up until recently, you usually had two examiners give the exams, but at this point, the documents all have the signature place for one examiner. So you are you can now do it with one examiner, and most exams I think are done with one examiner at this point. They used to have a trainer as well, but the trainer, I don't see it anywhere listed anymore, so I think they probably stopped authorizing trainers. Anyway, online exams are a COVID development, just like everywhere else. Unlike the UK, they basically follow the exact same procedures as in-person exams. There is on the table again proposals to change the system to something more interactive and to something that gives a more immediate feedback, but at this point they are exact copies of the in-person exams. They reset again. I didn't have a timer, so I'm just guessing how much time to reset. Anyway, let's see here. The first step is similar to the UK in that you contact either the Australian Maritime College directly or you contact the an examiner if you know one. The examiners' names are published on the website. My name's there. Everybody's, all the examiners' names are there. If they contact the AMC, the AMC then makes the contact to the examiners. But either way, you make contact with the AMC, and the AMC then will help you facilitate a date for the exam. Once the date is set, the applicant is emailed an exam sheet and an application as well. At the same time, they send the examiner a copy of the exam. The exams here are not public information, just like the UK. So the examiner is trusted to not share that exam with anyone else and to dispose of it when the exam process is over. Unfortunately here, a lot of printing and scanning involved. The applicant needs to print the documents before the exam. Probably a good idea to fill out as much of the application as they can and have the answer sheet ready to be written on. We do not have an online system at this point, although there is one on the table. Let's see here. So where am I? I lost my place here, sorry. Same time. On the chosen date of the exam, the examinee and the examiner will make contact via the chosen app. We don't have a default app here. You can use Zoom. Most people use Skype. I suppose you could use Google Hangouts. You could probably use FaceTime if you're both Apple users. It doesn't really matter what system you use to contact. Usually the examiner then will ask a few questions, talk back and forth, and only one camera is required here. Examiner will talk back and forth, they'll test the connection, be sure it's working, assess the reliability of it, and just maybe make a little small talk. That's usually what happens. Let me reset again. Then the question that most examiners tend to ask at this point is whether they want to file for a call sign recommend. Here, you have to ask for either a lucky dip call sign or a specific call sign. You can file that with your application even though you don't have the license yet, and they will issue the recommend if you pass the exam. So that's it's usually between $5 and $25, I think, depending on what kind of call sign you're requesting. But it speeds the process up if you ask for the recommend at the same time you take the exam. So it's recommended that you get the recommend. If they choose to do the recommend, then you add the fees for that to the $90 examination fee. you have them go off to the website that they pay in. They pay on that website, and they provide a number, a receipt number, which they get immediately upon paying. So they need to put that on their application. The examiner also asks for a photo ID, and we also require a photo of the individual. So they have to send that. The photo goes on the certificate of proficiency. So your Your certificate of proficiency has a photo on it. And so people will have to provide that, and you have to make sure the photos match, and the photo of the person taking the exam is the same person. So that's similar, I think, to the UK. The candidate shows the room, and then after that, if it's a foundation exam, we still have the practical for the foundation exam. So then they will need to... we need to have basically a series of questions and answers about amateur radio, and part of that is a sample QSO, which is actually quite fun on Skype or whatever you're choosing, because it does feel like real radio than when you do a QSO with somebody. So it is sort of a better experience, I think, than trying to do it in person. And a QSO sitting looking at a person is very different. But at any rate, that is all evaluated by the examiner. And the examiner says whether they pass that part or not. Let me reset again. So let's see here now. There's 15 parts to that, by the way. So most of them are pretty simple. It's like identify this piece of circuitry, and like I said, and the final bit is a QSO. But then assuming they pass or fail, the examiner still signs the sheet, and that's part of the documentation to be submitted. The written exam is started. In this case, because the written exam is a PDF on the examiner's computer, they usually make it available through a system that does not allow printing or copying. So Google, it's very easy to take a Google Drive document and forbid it from being printed or copied, and then share the link to that. And so the link is shared to the student, and the student then is able to see the document and do the exam from there. There is no real time limit to these things, so but I mean people aren't going to take forever doing them, so they do them as they can, mark their papers, and when they're done, they need to scan their answer sheet and email it to the examiner. So that's the way it's done here. The examiner then takes the application which the examinee sent, the exam sheet, the examiner certification, and the practical results, puts them all into one PDF, makes sure everything's complete. And if it is, the session ends, and the examiner then emails the whole packet of information on to the AMC to grade it. So nobody knows, he doesn't know he has passed, he or she doesn't know they passed, nobody knows they passed until a few weeks later when the thing comes in the email. And this is, again, where it's a little bit different. But the good thing is, if they've asked for the recommend, then they have the certificate and the recommend, and they can go straight to the AMC for the license. And that'll take another couple weeks, but it cuts a little bit of time out of it. And that's pretty much what has to be done. They also will have to pay a fee to the AMC, which I think is about $74. It's like an initiation fee of 20-something and a one-year license of $55. So they'll also have to pay that to the AMC. So it's a pretty pricey proposition getting an exam here. That's pretty much it for me. Hopefully didn't take up too much time. But if there's any questions or anything, I'll take them. VK2DY.
Hey, Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima.
EW8SNL, VK2DY. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, from GW8SZL. Yeah, preferred call sign. It sounds like an awful lot of a long-winded process to get a license down there in Australia there, Robert. But once we've got our pass and everything, the RSGB froze that information at Ofcom. So it goes on the Ofcom computer system. And then once you've got your information, you can just create an account on the Ofcom licensing system if you haven't already got one. Obviously, if you're just going to get the entry-level license, the foundation one, you'll have to create an account. But then you can go in, you can either do a lucky dip on the call sign and get whichever one comes up, or you can, if you've got a list of call signs that you like that you've actually written down, you can go through them, your first choice, second choice, it could be 25, 30, 50, 100 choices you've got, and you could enter this, put them in and see if they're available. And if they are available, then you've got the choice of grabbing it there, Robert. VK2DY, GW8SZL.
Yes, well, that's a very 21st century approach, but unfortunately we don't do that. But yes, you have to get a recommend from the Australian Maritime College for a call sign, and it can be a lucky dip, you're right, like the UK, or it can be an appropriate call sign. At this point, any 2x2 is available, 2x3 is available to any class license. It used to be we divided the licenses by class. We don't do that anymore. But the recommend is good for something like 30 days, I think. So that's plenty of time for you to get the results back and apply to the AMC, or apply to the ACMA for your license. Rather Byzantine, but it is what it is. Thanks, Dave. BK2DY. Anybody else?
Kilo Yankee 4, November Bravo, Scott here. Robert, with a quick question.
Yes, Scott, go ahead, VK2DY.
Thank you for the presentation, Robert. That's fascinating on all the differences in Great Britain and Australia and from the U.S. And so the question is about, I know you mentioned that, like over here, we have the test pool questions, and they may be quite lengthy. Like by the time you get to the amateur extra, it's 850 or so questions to study, and you only get 50 on the exam, so you have to kind of know all of them. But so there's nothing available like that there. Is that correct? And then obviously, though, there must be manuals, books, study materials, so that you make sure that so the student's studying the correct material for the exam, I guess is what I'm asking. Yeah, sometimes I wonder if it's good we know all the answers ahead of time or not, but anyway, just had that question. KY4NB over to VK2DY. And happy birthday to Gordon and a quick recovery. I forgot to say that earlier.
Yeah, VK2DY. There is a question pool. The question pool is not available to the public. It's on AMC has the question pool. They choose the questions that are asked out of that pool, and the examiner is not allowed to share that with the world. But there are online tests, and obviously if we've looked at the exams, we understand what the questions are, and you can ask slightly different questions and show people at least how the questions work. You can't really give them the real questions, but you can give them an alternative version of what there is. And those are available online. I think there's even an app for it. So, people don't have to go in cold. They'll know what the questions are like. VK2DY.
KY4NB returning. Well, thanks there, Robert. And, yeah, I probably still wouldn't have my license under those circumstances. Hi. Oh, goodness, I do have to go back and study some of that wonderful material. Got the ticket, right? But anyway, yeah, but just the differences are fascinating between the two countries, and I have to say maybe a bit tougher. I'm not sure I want to say that on air, but maybe a bit tougher in England and Australia But maybe not. Okay, I'm going to leave it at that. Thanks again, Robert, and I'll be listening KY4NB over to VK2DY in the net.
Yes, well, thank you for your question. Is there anyone else with a quick question before I pass this on? Because I think we're going to need to get to the U.S. version pretty quick. But anybody else have another question? VK2DY. Okay, I hear silence. So I am going to pass this on to Dave. And at the moment, I'm losing my thought pattern here. But anyway, I believe we're going to pass this on to EWG and the U.S. version of amateur radio online exams. VK2DY passing it on, 73.
Well, Robert, thank you so much. Fine job on your presentation. Good evening to you there, and good evening to everybody else on South Cars. KV9EWG, Echo 2289 is my South Cars number. And good evening, everybody. It's David, KV9EWG, and I'm very pleased to be part of this presentation this evening. Before I begin, though, I do want to mention that I am joined by three other GLARG VEs. We got Greg, KE5ALF, and we got Scott, KY4NB, and my friend Robert, KZ1B, who is also a fellow GLARG session manager, who has been a big help in my sessions there. And Robert is also a member of the Anchorage group, which is one of the first groups to do online testing was the Anchorage group there. So maybe Robert has some stuff to say about the Anchorage group as well. Anyways, I'm very pleased to be part of the program tonight, and as I've been very active in amateur license testing, I've been a member of GLARG since June of 2020, and I'm also a ARL VE, and I am as I mentioned earlier, I'm a GLARG session manager, so I now set up the testing sessions and conduct them myself there, so along with a fine team of people. Further, I'd like to say that I'm very proud of what online testing has done, and further what it's doing. For example, the he wants me to give the statistics on the GLARG group there, what they've done since their inception there. But right now, the statistics website is down, so I can't bring up the proper statistics. But I will mention, personally, myself, I've been part of over 585 testing sessions with GLARG since June of 2020, so we've been pretty active. Let me reset here. So unfortunately, I don't have the current statistics to give on that because that page is down. I will be spending some time this evening discussing requirements needed for online testing. I will be using the information supplied by GLARG, which is the Greater Los Angeles Amateur Radio Group. The requirements will be similar in most cases to other organizations. People can choose what organization wants to test, but they're, of course. Some of the requirements are you must meet these requirements to be able to take the test there. First, there's no age requirement to become an amateur radio operator. Although, if you're testing online and you're under 13 years old, you have to have your parent or guardian fill out a COPPA form, COPPA. Which is parental consent, and save the PDF and email it to the session manager to file for you to have permission to be online testing with the group there. When you assign government-issued picture ID, like a driver's license or a passport, some student IDs can be accepted. And in the case of a minor, if they don't have an ID, the parent can show their ID and vouch for the minor as well there. So, but yeah, you must have a valid picture ID to be able to go on and test with us. You must have a U.S. mailing address. And most importantly, and this has become even more important now since the FCC only communicates through email, you must have a valid email address, which is going to be FCC. And of course, you must have a ULS number from the FCC. So the candidate must consent to being audio and video recorded for the session. We need that in case FEC asks for proof. We will not video your ID documents. Also, our government does not record as a rule unless we see something we're suspicious of and we want to be able to monitor for anything that we might need to look at later if there's any questions about the testing situation. Let me reset here. So, all sessions, audio, video, and screen share contents for fully remote exam sessions could be recorded and retained for a year for test integrity and audits or review and training. You need a laptop or desktop computer with an up-to-date browser. Chrome at one time was the preferred browser, but we exam tools, the software we use to do the testing has gotten a lot better, and it works with most browsers now. Let's see here. So yeah, so we can test just about any browser now, and we have tried many. So make sure you have an updated browser, and be sure you can share your screen and your camera. At one time, we could not test on iPads or tablets or iPhones or cell phones there, but exam tools has advanced along quite a bit. And using Zoom, if you're on like an iPad, you use share web URL. Let me reset here. And the nice part about using the share web URL, where if you're on a PC or a Mac, we'd have to look at your system, see what programs you have open, to make sure there's no chat programs or any extra tabs or anything else that could aid in cheating. But when a candidate's on their on an iPad, for example, and they share a web URL, it'll bring up their video picture as it should be and their test on the screen. And they cannot bring up any other programs on their tablet without us seeing. So it's even more secure with that environment there. So if you are testing on a regular PC or a Mac or maybe some people have been using Linux machines there, we need to close all applications on your system except for Chrome and Zoom or whatever browser you're going to be using. And if you need to use a calculator, you can open that up. We will look at your system tray. We'll look and see what programs might be open. Anything that's open that doesn't need to be, will need to be closed. The camera must clearly show the candidate's entire face. And if we use a second video camera, which is optional with Guard, of course we'll want a side view. The camera must be high enough quality that it's usable for reviewing identification documents. So you start a camera out here to see if you can read your driver's license, and there's a link that they'll provide, which is http://zoom.com/test. If you can't read it, we can't read it, and you'll need another government-issued signed picture ID like a passport. Let me see here. Okay. Okay, we'll need to look around your room, and we will ask permission to be able to view the entire room. We're going to look, we're doing a full 360 view of the room there, about waist high. And then we're going to go look at the four corners and above you on the ceiling. Things we're looking for on the ceiling might be post-it notes up there, or other things that you're going to use for cheating. We're also looking for things like security cameras, which can be pointed at your system. We don't know who's on the other end looking at that camera, so somebody could be watching your system and helping you cheat there. So we want to make sure it's a clean environment with no cameras or any other notes there to help you with the test. Only one single monitor. So if you've got multiple monitors on your system, you'll have to be disconnected and or covered. Or turned around, or maybe you might have to move to a different environment without the multiple monitors. Only one monitor may be used during your test. The examiner will have to verify the other monitors are secured And as I said, if you have multiple monitors and that be covered up or turned away from you or something there. These are probably, okay, examiner's license verified, the other monitors are not going to be turned on during, if anything does get turned on during exam, we can terminate the exam because the three DEs are looking at you at all times. Might be four, but typically with a minimum three DEs in a room there. Let me reset.
David, did we lose you there?
Oh, okay. I'm not sure what happened there, but thanks, Bob. The only thing a monitor may be used, at the start of your exam, you'll need a way to show the DEs your screen. So it'll be a share screen typically a share screen on Zoom. Or if you're using a tablet or phone, it would be a share web URL or something similar. One thing that we used to run into with people using Android tablets or phones, when they would share the screen, their camera would turn off. So we just have to make them bring a second device in to be able to see the video. Well, we've learned now that all you got to do is request that they turn the camera back on the tablet there to be able to use it there. So, and that works fine. I've tested many people on phones, tablets, Chromebooks, and it all works. And actually, the tablets and phones are even more secure than testing with a computer. Let me reset here. All right. Alternatively, a webcam that will show the examinees. Yeah, you'll need your camera on at all times so we can see your face there. A stable broadband internet connection is required with at least 3 meg downloads and upload. We have had to postpone reschedule sessions that did not have enough bandwidth on the examinee side. If your audio or video is cutting out, we'll put you in the back of the waiting room and might lose your place in line. We have terminated sessions due to insufficient bandwidth or unstable internet connections. So make sure you got a stable internet connection there when you connect to test. Hands-free speaker and microphone setup. Headphones are not allowed at any time. That includes headphones, earbuds, and there was some talk, and now even with hearing aids being Bluetooth capable, if you have hearing aids, they'll have to be removed during the test as well, because hearing aids can be Bluetooth capable. So headphones or headsets are not allowed. Microphone must be on, and everything going on at the examinee's location must be audible to the VE team throughout the exam. We have successfully used a side view phone which was out of reach of the examinee. Okay. I'm going to take a pause here, see if there's any questions or comments at this point. KB90WG. Okay, when we're asking you to show us around the room, we'll also ask you if you wish to use a piece of scratch paper or a calculator during your test. A single piece of blank scratch paper has to be blank on both sides, can be used during the test, but nothing can be written on it before you start the test. If you want to use a calculator, we prefer to use an on-screen calculator on the computer. You can use a non-graphing, non-storing calculator to take the test, but we have to make sure that there's nothing saved in memories or the calculator is cleared before you can use it there with the test there. So calculator can be used. Of course, you got to be in a quiet space with a clear desk or table. That can be kept that way throughout the test there. The following circumstances could invalidate your exam and require you to reschedule or at least exit the test room and possibly go to the end of the queue. One, another person walking into the exam space or being visible or audible. Two, obvious candidate distractions from any source, including phones, watches, pets standing up, leaving your chair, etc. Appearing to look at the exam screen, reaching for things outside the view of the camera. Eyes moving away from your exam screen. We are watching your face during the test here, so we want to see what you're looking at. Or any other suspicious circumstances as determined by the examiners. We need to maintain integrity of the exam process. Please help us do that. With three or more VEs watching your eyes throughout the exam, you're really being scrutinized even more than an in-person exam. Let me say here. Okay, register for the examination. With that is, just presented, should you have any, with that has just been presented, should you have pointed your thinking in that right direction regarding online testing? So I'm going to take another call for any check-ins or comments from anybody. This is K9EWG.
Yes, David, thank you. And I wanted to make a comment in regards to how we accommodate for folks that have disabilities, and particularly those that are blind. I know that a few of us have tested blind candidates online, and it's very possible there. The one that I remember was the JAWS program that was a reader, and he took his Element 4 test. And he lived in Puerto Rico, and it worked out really well. And but it's just something that we keep in mind, that keeping the folks that if they want to do ham radio, that we give them the help that they need if they do have some disabilities. And David, maybe you have a comment about that.
Oh yeah, definitely. And we can accommodate, people with multiple disabilities, and I have tested multiple candidates with disabilities there. We can read the questions to the candidate. We have had times where the candidate might have a caretaker or something in a room helping maneuver through the screen or whatever. So we can make reasonable accommodations with people with disabilities. And yeah, JAWS is an effective tool. I've known many friends with JAWS because I've had many blind friends throughout the years. And yes, I have helped test blind candidates as well. And as I said, we can also, as VEs, read the questions and have the candidates choose from the multiple choice answers. Also, exam tools, the program that we use to generate the exams, can generate exams without schematic diagrams or pictures on there. Anything further from you, Bob, or anything else with any questions or comments, sir? This is K9EWG.
KE5ALF.
There's another one of our fine GLARG BEs there. Hey there, Greg, KE5ALF. Go ahead and your question or comment there.
Yeah, David, I just wanted to say, since you're my Elmer for GLARG, what a fine presentation you did tonight. And I know you couldn't get the stats, but I was checking on my stats just for giggles the other day, and I noticed that the very number one leader for GLARG happens to be somebody named David Peters. I don't know if you know him or not, but it seems that he's had over 500 and some odd sessions, and has personally helped a little over 5,000 people, candidates, examinees, whatever you want to call them, obtain their license. So I'd say that gentleman was a little bit involved in the program. What do you say?
Yeah, I know who he is, and yeah, I guess he is quite involved. And I think the last I saw before the system went down was like 585 or something like that. But yeah, thank you there, Greg. At this point, I'd like to also, go a little off script here, I'd like to toss it over to Bob, KZ1B. As I mentioned earlier, he's also with the Anchorage group, which was one of the first groups to do online testing there. Bob, could you maybe make a few comments there with the comparison with the Anchorage group there, since you're one of the VEs, KB9EWG.
Well, thank you, David. KZ1 Bravo here, Southern Utah, St. George, and just to give you an idea where I'm located, I'm about 45 minutes away from Zion Park and a couple-hour drive from the north rim of the Grand Canyon. Just kind of an overview of what David had talking about GLARG on that, what they do. The differences that Anchorage does is we do require that we have a second camera. We do record the session only during the time that the candidate is actually taking the exam, and that's about it. Otherwise, what David has mentioned for what GLARG does is pretty much what we do. But I do want to take us back. We're going to step into the time machine here. We're going to go back to 1984, and that is when Anchorage Club in Anchorage petitioned the FCC to start the VEC program. And their reasoning was because of the distances that we have. And I'm going to probably step on some toes here a little bit, people in Region 5 in Texas, but if Alaska was cut in half and made into two states, Texas would still be number three. So basically, there was really a need to have a VEC. There are 14 VECs today in the U.S. And then in 2014, they petitioned again the FCC to go ahead and start a remote testing program, and they were the first ones also to start remote testing. So it's really kind of neat. If you want to know a little more about the organization, it's kl7aa.org. They have also what they call the RSOC. It's Radio Science and Operations Center. It's located right adjacent to Elmendorf Air Force Base. And they also train the folks at the Air Force Base how to work HF. And so I'm going to turn, just do a reset here. Okay, and at this time, if there's any questions that any folks have in regards to anything about Anchorage, I am one of the ones that submits directly to the FCC. We just send in a little batch file. It's kind of pretty quick and pretty easy. We, as a group, we do not do any more paper testing. We do not use paper anymore. Either we're taking exams on tablets or doing remote. The advantage of having all electronic is the filing is just a lot easier, not dealing with a lot of paper, and then you can secure it a lot pretty easy. So if there's any questions, please come now, KZ1 Bravo.
Kilo Yankee 4, November Bravo. This is Scott from Memphis. I just had a quick question for you.
Kilo Yankee 4, November Bravo. Scott, go ahead, KZ1 Bravo.
KZ1 Bravo, KY4NB returning. So I've only had my license less than 2 years and joined the local club, of course, and kind of heard about, I've been interested for a long time since a kid. But anyway, a friend of mine was a member of that club. So, you know, not going to the meetings prior to getting my license, right, or studying or anything. So the question is, like, there might be individuals out there in the world and they're interested in ham radio, but they're not even a member of a club. So the hope would be to get information to those people. Maybe, I guess, interested people just search the internet and come up with the Alaska group and GLARG and ARRL, and, you know, how do I go about studying, and the hamstudy.org app. And I know a lot of younger people are real savvy with that, so maybe that takes care of itself. But, like, you know, how do we pull in new people that aren't even part of a club and get them hooked into the online study and the online testing? And I think that's a wonderful option. And the second part to this question sort of kind of is like, so how do we pull in these new people there and that are, you know, maybe tech savvy and would go for this? But then the other cases, people in my club are older and, yeah, they still do everything on paper and send it in, and they don't even have a PayPal account for payments on the dues or anything. And just kind of in the dark ages. So how do we sell the clubs on this too, which I think would be wonderful, like, are people willing to do online Zoom presentations to kind of maybe convince the clubs with older people that this is a good thing and it might be a way to get new members? I'm sorry, it's such a long question. KY4NB, back over to you, Bob.
Hey, Scott, that's a great question, and we've looked at that too. And basically, I think from your question, because it is kind of long, has a few facets to it, is one of the things we do with Anchorage, and we get permission from the candidate, and we actually notify a club in their area of the new candidate, and so that the club can reach out to the candidate and invite them to one of their meetings. That's one pathway. As far as for the general public, as you know, some people really don't have a good idea of what ham radio is, and they just have visions of a guy putting up a huge antenna in the yard, and you know, it's just amazing. The public that's not hooked up with some folks that are ham radio operators, what they envision, what they do. But as far as helping out, as far as in the community, a lot of outlets, either through your church, Boy Scouts, any civic organizations and stuff like that, as far as maybe doing a presentation or something like that to kind of let the public know what's going on and the advantages of utilizing ham radio, and as far as when we have significant events, this is what's left sometimes. So they just need to realize that. So when their cell phone gets overwhelmed at the cell site and they can't get through because everybody's calling, they can use the ham radio there. So I'm not sure if I answered your question, but I'm going to turn it back over to you. Did I hit all the spots there?
Thank you, Bob. You did. I kind of was all over the place with my questions. I didn't have it formulated in my head too much. But, yes, we got to get the word out, and we need more hams. And thank you to you, Bob, and David, and to Robert, and to Dave, and there in Great Britain for the wonderful presentations, and to good Lord, Alf, ALF. And, well, anybody else who's been on tonight. Back to the net, KY4NB.
This is KZ1 Bravo, and thank you, Scott. And, you know, I just thought of something else, too, and I meant to mention it when we had both of our United Kingdom and also Australia folks on board, is that what's nice about the online testing is that the exam pool is always fresh and correct. If you're using paper exams, and I know that some of them are using the PDFs and stuff like that, but if they're using the paper exams, because I also test with the league, and if we do not keep the exam booklets current, if there's a bad question in the booklet and we don't catch it, the candidate might be taking an exam that has a bad question in it and that it should have been removed. Using our exam tools site that GLARD uses and Anchorage uses, we always have a clean question pool that we're working off of. So that's a real good advantage. And I'm going to go ahead and turn it back to Dave, KB9EWG, KZ1 Bravo.
Oh, thank you, Bob. And I'm going to elaborate a little bit more on that when you're talking about the with the exams or the generating exams and such there. Robert did mention, and I had mentioned exam tools, which is one of the tools that we use for testing. It's the testing website that we use. And that site's really come a long way since I started with them, and they've really kept up and really been a great tool to work with. We can generate exams multiple ways with exam tools. We can do an online test. We can test with tablets at an in-person session. We can test with what they call grade cam. In other words, you'll print out these bubble sheets just like you would see with the paper tests with the templates. You'll print out these sheets that people can fill out their test on, and then use your cell phone or tablet, take a picture of this test, and exam tools will grade it for you. And everybody can sign online. Also, you can, if you really want templates bad enough, Exams will generate templates, and you can actually make your own paper templates with Paper Punch there, and it'll generate the test for you. And as I said, the Grade Cam will grade these tests for you, or you can use tablets. Let me say here. So there's many great ways of taking a test. I'm going to put a link in the chat box. That was a session I sat in on. It was what we call a hybrid session. The gentleman that was running this session didn't have any other VEs available locally, but he did want to get some of the paper tests. So we had VEs log on remotely, and he had a screen up with us on there, talked to the candidate there, and the candidate did take a test on paper, and he did grade cam to grade the test there. So I said, great. So this exam tool has been a wonderful tool to work with for getting the test taken. I'm going to reset, and then you have one more thing here, KB9EWG. Unfortunately, Ben, KDHJDS, could not be here this evening. Ben is also one of our GLARG BEs, but he's also a team lead for the ARL, and I'm also a ARL testing, I'm a VE with the ARL. I'm not a lead, but I am an examiner. And I've been a lead examiner now since, I got my stats here, since August 20th, 2013. And I've done 64 sessions, almost been in person with the ARL. And I've done a few online sessions there. And if Ben was here, he could have touched on some of the rules of the ARL testing there. But pretty much it's mostly the same. Lead does require two cameras, a front and side view. And they do record all sessions, of course. As was mentioned earlier, we do not record the identification. We don't start recording until after the candidate has identified. In fact, you'll see in my video, if you watch the video I post in the chat box, I do pause the video while the candidate's showing his ID card. Anyways, any further questions or comments before our security is next here, KB9EWG?
Hey, off real quick.
Yes, sir, Greg, KE5ALF, KB9EWG.
All right, just wanted to check in one more time real quick before I leave. I've got my local ham radio club here that is running the net. I've got to be there in just a couple of minutes. I just wanted to say, Gordon, we all miss you. We hope you're doing well, and we can't wait to hear you back on the air again. 73 is to you. Okay, Dave, I'm going to turn it back over to you. This is KEF. Excuse me, KE5ALF, I'm clear on my end.
Okay, real good there, Greg. Thank you so much. And we'll see you at the next testing session there. By the way, I've got one candidate signed up for my next Wednesday session there, so there will be a session there next Wednesday. Anyways, any more questions or comments before I secure the net? This is KB9EWG.
Mike 6, Papa Queen Whiskey.
Mike 6, Papa Queen Whiskey. Well, good morning to you there, sir. How are you doing, KB9UWC?
I'm doing well, thank you very much. It's not a question at all, so it's just to say that when I got my last time, and I got it in 2018, I did a two-day course through my club where the second part of the second day with the exam, so you did like a day and a half of learning with a tutor that talks about different aspects of ham radio and that. And then, like, the second part in the afternoon with the exam, and that's how I managed to get my license through the radio club, which registered me through the RSGB for the exam paper. And I got it through my club doing it that way. Back to you. I've forgot your name now, sorry.
My name here is David, calls KD9EWG, and thank you for your comments there. Okay, I'm going to real quickly turn it to my fellow GLARG members. If they got any comments or anything else on GLARG, or something they might have missed or need to touch on. KY4NB, Scott, any comments for you there, sir?
No, David, I can't think of anything else. Just thank you for being the fearless leader there, and Elmer for myself and Greg and many others. And so we do appreciate everything from all the people tonight that spoke and all the people that called in. And I think the online testing is the here to stay, and only going to be getting better and better as time goes on. So that's all I've got, my last 2 cents worth here. KY4NB, back over to KB9EWG in the net.
Well, thank you, Scott. Good to hear that, and good to hear you. And let's get to the next question. KE5ALF, any further things from you there? Well, is it Clark B? Okay, nothing further from Greg there. KZ1B, Robert, anything further from you, from either a Clark or Anchorage side of things there?
Well, thank you, David. And, you know, I was just thinking, and it really has been a pleasure working with you. I enjoy working with you on your teams there. Some of the folks might be interested that, and I know you and I have worked on some pretty big sessions, and we've had like, and you might correct me, I think close to 130 candidates in one session using over 70 VEs to conduct that. And you know, it even in an in-person session, that would be rather challenging. But it's just amazing the places that we, as they say, we're testing all over the world. And with folks that may be on military bases and such, and in all kinds of situations, in trucks, in on a Navy ship, you know, goes on and on. So it really is fun. So that's my only comment, David. And thanks so much for being our net control this evening for the event tonight. And I'm going to turn it back over to KB9EWG. KZ1 Bravo. It is.
Oh, fine comments, Sir Robert. And yes, I do remember some of the big sessions we had. God, I remember one of the biggest ones we had, where the server went down midstream. that was very interesting. There, you know, we had to stop everything, and you know, and like I said, we got 130 candidates over 70 DEs, and we got done like 3-4 hours. It was pretty amazing, the things we were doing when we first started. And what was really interesting was the time that we had to stop everything, and they had to stop the session, go online to Zoom, and update our Zoom account because we had too many people trying to join, and they had to go to a higher level Zoom account because it was locking people out of the session there because we reached the maximum number. So it is pretty amazing, some of the things they said. And like you said, you know, some places we tested at. Yeah, guy on a deck of a Navy ship, we actually tested there. I remember testing a guy at the base of the tower at the great infantry tower at Cal Poly. So many different places we tested, the things we've seen and things we've done there. Very interesting. Thank you, Robert. One more quick call before I secure the net. Any further comments, questions? This is KB9EWG before I secure the net. Last call. All right. Looks like nobody else is going to be checking in there. So, first of all, I want to wish Gordon good health, fast recovery, and happy birthday. So, thank you, everybody, for coming this evening, and for those who have missed the program. The audio recording of the program should be posted on our website tomorrow or shortly thereafter. Special thanks to our narrators this evening and support of the exam teams for being with us this evening. This has been SCARS, UIP. Net schedules and general information may be found on our wonderful website. SCARSVoip.com is SCARSVoip.com. Good night to all. 7:03. We are now closing this session. Thank you for participation. This is now closed. This is David, KB9EWG, in La Crosse, Wisconsin, saying 7:03, and everybody have a great evening.